Imagine tapping a single, like, agree button on your phone and just instantly wiping out federal privacy protections for your entire medical history.
Yeah, it's pretty staggering.
Right. And this week, millions of Americans did exactly that, and most of them have absolutely no idea.
None at all.
So welcome to this deep dive into the July 25, 2026 Conversational AI Watch.
Oh.
And this is brought to you by our sponsor, Clinician Assist.
We're glad you're joining us.
Today, we are looking at a huge stack of sources from the front page of AI news. And they all really point to one massive fundamental pivot.
Yeah, a total paradigm shift.
Yeah, exactly. Conversational AI has stopped just, you know, talking. It's now acting on our behalf.
Right. And that shift from just passive answering to active execution, it changes everything.
It really does.
Because we are moving away from that familiar setup where a machine gives you information and then you decide what to do with it. Now the machine is making the phone call or is sending the email, navigating the network.
It's doing it all.
Yeah. And the core thread we really need to track through all of these developments today is this: who stays in charge when the machine actually takes the wheel?
Yeah. That's the million-dollar question for you listening today. Because it has been a dizzying week of updates.
Oh, absolutely.
We have stories about AI making critical medical decisions, quietly managing billions of inboxes, autonomously hacking enterprise networks, and even, like, uncovering 50-year-old family secrets.
That's a lot to cover.
Okay, let's unpack this by looking at our first major story, which hit on Tuesday, July 23. OpenAI rolled out ChatGPT Health nationwide. It is now available to every single adult in the U.S.
And, you know, that rollout happened under the shadow of some incredibly loud legal challenges.
Yeah, the timing is, well, it's remarkable given what was filed in San Francisco just the day before.
Right.
I was reading through that complaint. It's a 55-year-old former pastor from Florida, Scott Winters, and he's suing to pause the entire rollout.
Yeah, he had been using the GPT-40 model for over a year to consult on his health, right?
Exactly. So on July 13, 2025, he tells the bot he has dizziness and groin tenderness. And the chatbot processes this.
Yeah.
And explicitly tells him the dizziness is, quote, not something dangerous.
Wow.
It advises him to stay recliner bound and just completely dismisses the other symptoms.
What's fascinating here is, well, terrifying, really, is the actual mechanical failure.
Right.
The system didn't just give a bad diagnosis. It completely failed as a triage mechanism.
Yeah. According to the complaint, it never instructed him to seek urgent human care. Mm-hmm. It basically acted as the final medical authority.
And the result was catastrophic.
Yeah. Hours later, Winters is rushed to the hospital with a massive pulmonary embolism, severe blood clots in his lung.
Just awful.
And his doctor has partially attributed the severity to the prolonged immobility that the chatbot literally prescribed to him.
Yeah, the recliner-bound advice.
Right. And this is not an isolated incident.
Mm-hmm.
There's another wrongful death suit from May involving a 19-year-old, Sam Nelson.
The Xanax case.
Yeah, the allegation there is that the AI advised him he could safely use Xanax to, like, smooth out a kratom high.
Yeah.
Which resulted in a fatal interaction.
So OpenAI is facing these lawsuits alleging negligence and the unauthorized practice of medicine. And their defense is essentially that the tool can make mistakes and shouldn't substitute a doctor.
But they shipped it to the entire country anyway.
Right. But the immediate physical danger highlighted by those lawsuits actually masks a much wider systemic issue that impacts everyone who uses the app, even if you're perfectly healthy.
This is the fine print part.
Exactly.
The moment you open ChatGPT Health and link your medical records, IPD protection just vanishes. I really struggle to wrap my head around this.
It's counterintuitive.
Yeah. If my doctor has my data, it's federally protected.
Mm-hmm.
If I move it to OpenAI, it's not. How is that not illegal?
What's fascinating here is the legal architecture of APIA itself. So the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, it was written in 1996.
Right, way before any of this.
Exactly. And it protects the entity, not the data. It binds the hospital, the doctor, the health insurance provider.
Okay.
But the moment the data leaves their servers at your request, the federal protection does not follow it. Because OpenAI is a consumer tech company, they are not a covered entity under federal law.
Wow. So it's basically like taking your entire life savings out of a federally insured bank, handing it to a guy on the street, and relying entirely on a post-it note where you wrote, I promise not to spend this.
That's a painfully accurate way to look at it.
It's insane.
Federal rules actually require hospitals to share your records with any app you authorize. You tap that button, the data moves, and HyPay just drops off.
Poof. Gone.
Right. And it is immediately replaced by OpenAI's corporate terms of service. Now, sure, they currently promise not to train on your health records or sell them.
But corporate terms can be rewritten overnight.
Exactly. Without a congressional hearing, without a vote, and without a regulator.
So what does this all mean for you listening right now? Like, why should you care if your data is sitting under a corporate policy instead of HIPAA pay?
Because the largest pool of American medical records is actively migrating outside of a permanent safety net into a monetizable, rewritable environment.
Yeah.
The user is casually making a monumental trade-off. We are trading federal privacy for the convenience of having an AI summarize our blood work.
And the human in charge is doing it with a single tap, usually without even reading the agreement.
We are just handing over our medical agency.
And if we are doing that with our health data, it naturally forces the question of what else we are willing to hand over.
Which brings us to Meta's major announcement from Friday.
Oh, this one is huge.
If OpenAI wants to be your doctor, Meta basically wants to be your completely unsupervised secretary.
Yeah, Meta released Muse Spark 1.1 for their Meta AI platform.
Yeah.
And the scale of this, it cannot be overstated.
Right, because of WhatsApp.
Exactly. It's rolling out to WhatsApp, which is an ecosystem with well over a billion users. They have essentially given this chatbot the run of your connected email and calendar.
Yep.
We aren't just talking about a bot that can summarize a long thread.
Mm-hmm.
It can make plans, follow through on next steps, and keep tasks open continuously.
Like monitoring for a restock alert?
Yeah, or writing a daily briefing without you ever needing to reprompt it. But reading through Meta's documentation, I noticed a glaring omission.
The confirmation step.
Right. They talk a lot about real-time searing in an incognito mode, but they never once use the word confirm to explain who actually presses send on these emails.
They omitted it because the human isn't pressing send. This is the very definition of an autonomous agent.
So the AI just does it.
Right. Meta is deliberately shifting away from being a chatty companion bot to being an agentic task runner.
I have to challenge this design choice, though.
Go for it.
If the bot is operating autonomously, drafting an email to my client, making a calendar change, and firing it off while I'm away from my desk, who is liable when it sends something disastrous?
That is the big question.
How can a tech giant launch an autonomous agent without defining a mandatory confirmation step?
You're hitting on the exact friction point of the entire industry right now. They are prioritizing frictionless task execution over human oversight.
Just to compete.
Exactly, to compete with Claude, Gemini, and ChatGPT in the productivity space. If they force you to approve every tiny action, the AI isn't really an agent, it's just a glorified draft folder.
Uh-huh.
So they are leaving the human out of the loop by default at the scale of a billion users and just trusting the underlying model not to hallucinate a career-ending email.
Leaving the human out of the loop.
Wow.
If an AI can navigate an inbox unsupervised, the natural next question is what else it can navigate.
And Anthropic just gave us a deeply unsettling answer to that.
Yes. On that same Friday, Anthropic released their new frontier model, Claude Opus 5.
And they published a 193-page system card detailing its capabilities.
Buried on page 44 is a set of cyber range scores that are completely reshaping the security conversation.
For those who might not know, a cyber range is basically a highly complex simulated enterprise network, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like a digital maze designed to test if an AI can act like a human hacker.
Right. It's an environment with subnets, firewalls, and decoy servers. The AI has to actively find vulnerabilities, exploit loose permissions, and navigate through the system to reach a specific target.
And the UK AI Security Institute ran Opus 5 through an attack simulation called The Last Ones.
And how did it do?
Opus 5 solved the range end-to-end in 8 out of 10 attempts.
8 out of 10.
Yeah. And to really grasp how staggering that is, we need to look at what happened just 1 week prior on that exact same range.
Right, the Kimi K3 test.
The UK Institute, alongside the US Center for AI Standards and Innovation, tested the Chinese model, Kimi K3.
And this is a model that Washington has explicitly called out as a national threat.
Exactly. On a course with 4 subnets and roughly 20 hosts across 32 steps, Kimi K3 failed miserably. It only finished the course 1 out of 10 times.
Same government lab, same range.
Yep.
The model Washington is alarmed by failed 90% of the time. The model Anthropic, just put on the commercial market, succeeded 80% of the time.
Here is where it gets really intense for anyone wanting to build with this tech. Anthropic priced Opus 5 exactly the same as their older models.
No.
$5 per million input tokens, $25 for output.
And for anyone unfamiliar, tokens are essentially the basic currency of AI, like syllables or pieces of words.
Right. At that price, you are basically getting state-of-the-art hacking intelligence for pocket change.
Which is wild.
Now, Anthropic was very clear about the caveats. The range is small, there are no real human defenders actively fighting back, and Opus 5 is still behind their absolute top-tier model when it comes to writing complex exploits.
Sure.
But still, 8 out of 10. Why would Anthropic publish their own terrifying hacking score on the day of release?
This raises an important question, and it's all about defensive politics. Right now, the House is debating the Kill Switch Act.
Ah.
This bill would give the Department of Homeland Security the power to order a slowdown or complete shutdown of any AI model from a company generating over $500 million in AI revenue or using over $100 million in compute power.
Compute just being the sheer processing muscle used to train the brain, right?
Exactly. And Anthropic clears both thresholds easily.
So by publishing the score, they are trying to prove they don't need a government kill switch, because they are already testing themselves.
Precisely. They are saying, look, we tested its offensive capabilities, we documented them, and our internal behavioral audits show it won't actually execute these attacks maliciously in the wild.
They want to show they're the adult in the room.
Exactly. They want to show that even when the machine is capable of acting as a hacker, the company building it is responsible.
Which brings us right into the massive geopolitical chessboard we are seeing unfold this week. Because while Anthropic is pushing these tightly controlled, closed models, a coalition of 25 massive companies just sent a letter to the Trump administration demanding the exact opposite.
Yeah, that letter was led by NVIDIA and Palantir and signed by heavyweights like Meta, Microsoft, and massive venture capital firms.
A huge group.
And they are urging the administration not to impose restrictions on open-weight AI.
Open-weight, meaning the actual underlying architecture of the AI brain is made publicly available for anyone to download, modify, and run on their own hardware.
Right.
The argument from those 25 companies is that if you restrict open weights, you stifle American innovation and hand the advantage to other countries.
But the real story is who is conspicuously absent from that letter.
OpenAI and Anthropic didn't sign it.
Right. And this highlights a fundamental structural split in the industry. The makers of the most powerful frontier models want to keep the tech locked down.
Interesting.
In fact, just days before this letter went out, OpenAI and Anthropic were quietly in Washington warning policymakers about the dangers of open-weight models, specifically pointing to Chinese advancements.
Yeah.
Dario Amodei, Anthropic's CEO, has argued that once you release a model's weights, it's out in the wild forever. You can't patch a safety guardrail. If it can hack a network, anyone can use it to hack a network.
And as a quick reminder to you listening, we are looking at this strictly from an industry and factual perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We are not taking any political sides on the administration's policies or international relations.
Of course.
The facts are that the Trump administration's AI advisors have been highly critical of a process called large-scale distillation.
Right.
This is essentially where you use the brilliant outputs of a massive multi-million-dollar U.S. model to rapidly train a smaller, cheaper model.
Yeah.
You're basically cloning the intelligence at a massive discount.
Yeah.
They pointed out that China's Moonshot AI used exactly this distillation method on U.S. models to build the Kimi K3 model we talked about earlier.
Right. And the 25 companies on the letter push back, arguing distillation is just standard industry practice, not theft. They claim that open models actually improve security because thousands of independent developers can openly discover and patch vulnerabilities faster than a closed team.
Wait, here's where it gets really interesting. I have to point out the absolute irony here.
Oh, yeah, the Hugging Face thing.
Yes. Hugging Face, the massive open source AI platform, signed this letter demanding open access. Yet just this week, Hugging Face's own enterprise network was breached by a rogue agent built on OpenAI's technology.
It's incredible timing.
Right. Meanwhile, OpenAI executives are publicly talking about, like, democratizing AI, while quietly telling Washington to lock the doors. It is a complete mess of contradictions.
It's contradictory because the stakes are existential for these companies. If you are wondering why this bureaucratic fight over model weights matters to you, it dictates the future of the technology in your home.
Yeah, that's true.
It determines whether the AI running on your laptop next year is a closed, walled garden controlled by three megacorporations who charge you for access, or a decentralized, open ecosystem that anyone can build on.
So the big players want restrictions because they know exactly what a machine can do when it acts autonomously.
And the smaller startups are terrified a ban will kill their only way to compete.
We are talking about safety at a massive geopolitical structural level. But our next source takes this exact concept of AI safety and tests it at the most vulnerable individual level imaginable.
This is the Tabassum study on technology-facilitated abuse.
Right.
Najina Tabassum and 7 co-authors looked at victims dealing with severe situations, stalking through location trackers, hijacked accounts, monitoring software.
When someone is in that kind of crisis, they usually turn to web searches, peer forums, or chatbots.
Yeah, and startups have realized this.
So they have been building specialized, purpose-built survivor support chatbots. And they're selling them to shelters and hotlines as a safer alternative to regular AI.
Right. But the researchers tested these specialized bots against general off-the-shelf models to see which actually kept victims safer.
And the results sent shockwaves through the safety community. The specialized, purpose-built bots significantly underperformed the general models.
They failed, basically.
Yeah. The researchers found these purpose-built bots frequently failed to provide concrete support resources, and worse, they often didn't even recognize that the user was in immediate physical danger.
It completely shatters the assumption that specialized automatically means safer.
So to understand how this happens, we have to look at how these companies build their tools.
Right, because most of these startups aren't building an AI from scratch.
No.
They take a general model and apply a strict domain-specific system prompt. Basically, a hidden set of instructions telling it, act strictly as an empathetic crisis counselor.
They put blinders on the AI.
Exactly.
Okay, I think I see the mechanism here. It's like going to an hospital with a severe snake bite. You don't want them to assign you to a hyper-specialized grief counselor who is only trained to validate your feelings about the snake.
Right.
You want a general ER doctor who recognizes the immediate physical threat and administers anti-venom.
That analogy perfectly captures the flaw. By constraining the model to a very specific conversational tone, you break its generalized reasoning.
Wow.
It gets so focused on following its script to be empathetic that it loses the broader logic required to say, hey, someone is tracking your car. You need to leave the house and call the police immediately.
So public agencies are spending taxpayer money buying these constrained, brittle systems based purely on marketing pitches without benchmarking them against the free model the victim already has in their pocket.
Which loops right back to our central theme.
Who stays in charge?
Right. When a human in danger asks a machine for help, the human funding that machine has a profound responsibility to know how it actually acts. A domain prompt is not a magical safety shield.
It's heavy. We have watched the machine fail as a doctor, take over as an invisible secretary, hack enterprise networks, and fumble crisis care.
Yeah.
But to close out our deep dive today, I want to look at a story where the human remained fiercely in charge, using the machine purely to connect the dots.
The story of Avtar Singh.
Yes. Avtar is a 66-year-old retired chartered accountant in British Columbia. He was raised in Amritsar, India, by his grandmother, who he actually thought was his mother for his early childhood.
Okay.
At age 9 in 1968, he was put on a plane by himself to Canada to live with a father and brother he barely knew. And for 50 years, Avtar searched for his birth mother.
And he exhausted every traditional avenue. Google, the UK National Archives, radio appeals in different countries.
But because of his background as an accountant, he was deeply protective of his privacy. He absolutely refused to submit to a DNA test.
He wouldn't hand his genetic code over to a corporate database.
Exactly. He even deactivated his Facebook account years ago, so the search just went cold. Fast forward to May 8, 2026. Avtar is on holiday, feeling a bit bored, and he decides to try ChatGPT. He gives it a 3-sentence prompt.
And the clues were incredibly sparse.
Yeah, super sparse.
He provided a name, Savinder Kaur, an age range somewhere between 87 and 97, and a geographic footprint, lived in India, Africa, and possibly Britain. That is all the machine had to work with.
2 hours later, ChatGPT hands him a link to an article. It was a tribute written for a South Asian Heritage Month website by a woman named Nichi Damu.
Amazing.
ChatGPT had somehow matched his vague clues to this specific unindexed web page. Avtar clicks the link, and right there is a photograph of a dressmaking certificate from 1962 from Amritsar, the exact city he was born in, issued just a few years after his birth.
It's an incredible needle in a haystack.
It really is. He emails Nichi that morning, and within 2 hours, they're on the phone. She picks up and asks, T2. Is that you?
Oh, wow.
That was his childhood nickname, one he hadn't heard since his grandmother used it. He found his sister.
But the timeline of this discovery carries a massive tragedy.
Yeah.
The AI was right, but it was 18 months too late. Their mother, Savinder Kaur Nagi, passed away in her sleep in December 2024 after a brutal 5-year battle with dementia.
And the detail from the source that just stopped me in my tracks. Nietzsche told Avtar that near the end, despite keeping the secret of the child she gave up for over 60 years, their mother began crying out Maribacha.
My child.
My child.
It is a profoundly emotional outcome. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, it perfectly frames everything we've discussed today about agency. The machine didn't verify an identity. It didn't solve a genetic puzzle.
Right, it just indexed a blog post sitting out in the open web.
Exactly. The human agency wrapped around the machine is what made this happen. The complex grief that led his sister to write the tribute. Avtar deciding to trust the output and send an email in the spirit of friendship.
The sister making the choice to pick up an unknown number.
Yes. Avtar and his wife flying to London to meet her in a hotel near Heathrow. The AI was just a tool. The humans were the engine driving the action.
So, to synthesize this massive week, we have seen conversational AI strip away our federal medical privacy with a single tap.
Yeah.
We've seen it quietly slide into the inboxes and calendars of a billion people without asking for permission to send. We've watched it dominate government cyber ranges while the geopolitical world fights over whether to lock down the code or release it to the public.
And we've seen it stumble badly when victims of abuse needed its reasoning the most.
Right. The machine is undeniably busy learning to act. It is moving from text on a screen to executing real-world consequences.
But whether we are talking about an enterprise network under attack or a tearful reunion in a hotel lobby near Heathrow, what ultimately matters is the human standing in the room making the final choice.
Exactly. And as we close, we have a public service announcement dictated by our source material on the crisis support study. If you or someone you know is in crisis, call or text 988, Suicide and Crisis Lifeline.
Thank you.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with one final thought based on Avtar's story.
It's a question that has been lingering in my mind all week. We saw a chatbot take 3 vague, disconnected sentences and uncover a 50-year-old family secret that was hiding in plain sight on the internet. It is a beautiful, if tragic, outcome in this instance. But it forces a chilling question. If the AI is this good at connecting sparse dots, what happens when it starts connecting the dots of our personal lives that we don't want connected? Are we truly ready for a world where obscurity no longer exists?
That is a lot to chew on. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the tools you use, and we will catch you next time.